Thank you all for being here today. I'm presenting today on behalf of an interdisciplinary research team, which includes two principal investigators, Alexandra Minniz, an epidemiologist from the Women's Global Health Imperative in San Francisco, and Sergio Bautista, who is a health economist from the National Institute of Public Health in Mexico, as well as my colleague, an anthropologist, Pilar Torres, also from the Institute. The National Institute of Public Health in Cuernavaca, Mexico. And the analysis I'm going to present today was part of a larger qualitative study that was funded by the California-Mexico Health Initiative. And the focus of today's presentation will be on migration to the United States and attitudes toward risk and uncertainty among Mexican adolescents. I do not have any financial relationships to disclose. So the reason we decided to do this study is because the literature has documented a higher prevalence of risk behaviors among adult Latino immigrants when they're compared to non-immigrants in the United States, and increasing with time in the United States. A recent study, and when I talk about risk behaviors, most of the research that's been done in the past has focused on HIV-related risk behaviors. A recent study utilizing a crossover design looked at individuals before and after migration and documented an increase in risk behaviors such as sex under the influence of drugs and alcohol, and an increased rates of sex with commercial sex workers following migration to the United States. And so despite these findings that we're seeing in adult immigrant Latino and Central American populations in the U.S., few studies have really looked at adolescents. And those studies that have focused on adolescents have been primarily based in the United States, and they compare immigrant youth to U.S. or native populations. So to give you an idea of, you know, the impact or the number of youth that this kind of pertains to, of the 11 million Mexican-born population in the United States, about 17% are between the ages of 15 and 24, and this is the age group that we surveyed in our study. And then according to the National Council Population in Mexico, about 30% of return migrants are between the ages of 15 to 24. And I'm going to use this term return migrants throughout my presentation, and what I'm referring to is an individual who is from Mexico, migrates to the United States, and may stay a while, and then returns back to Mexico either temporarily or permanently. So why are we seeing these increased risk behaviors in immigrant populations? Several hypotheses have been proposed to explain these increases that have been documented in many studies of Mexican and Central American immigrants. A few of these include migration-related vulnerability, acculturation, and health selection. Conclusions from these studies are based on comparisons with native U.S. populations and do not address the underlying characteristics of individuals who choose to migrate. Our study explores one potential underlying characteristic of migrants, which may contribute to the documented increases in risk behavior. And we're referring to this as self-selection. So according to microeconomic theory, individuals respond differently to uncertain events and to risk. And when we look at the decision to migrate to the United States, it often involves very high levels of uncertainty and risk. We know that about 80% of migration from Mexico to the U.S. is undocumented, and just crossing the border itself can lead to a number of risks such as robbery, violence, rape, injury, starvation. And then once you make it to the United States, there's the uncertainty of finding employment and housing. And so considering all this, it is likely then that individuals who choose to migrate may have different attitudes towards uncertainty and towards risk than those individuals who in the same context decide not to migrate. So this was the purpose of our study, to explore this idea that perhaps youth who decide to migrate to the U.S. have different attitudes toward risk and uncertainty than those who decide to stay behind, and that this may come into play when we talk about subsequent behaviors in the United States and participation in risk behaviors. So this was a qualitative study, and we started by developing and piloting two semi-structured interview guides, one for migrant youth and one for non-migrant youth. We conducted key informant interviews and 47 in-depth interviews with male and female youth in Mexico in two communities, and the youth were between the ages of 15 and 24. We interviewed half of the interview participants were return migrants, and half were non-migrant relatives. So they were youth that lived in a household where somebody from their family, from their immediate family, whether it was their parent, their sibling, spouse, or cousin, had migrated to the U.S. Due to the difficulty of identifying migrants before they migrate, we chose to interview return migrants, and we assessed retrospectively their decision to migrate after they returned back to Mexico. The interviews were transcribed and analyzed in Spanish, and we used Atlas TI software and followed grounded theory methodology in our analysis. So I wanted to give you a little idea of where this study was conducted. We chose Tehuacan, Puebla, as our first site to do interviews because this is a low density migration community, which means that they have a more recent history of migration and don't have quite as many migrants that go to the U.S. as the second community that we chose, which is Jilquilpan. And Jilquilpan is from a traditional sending state in Mexico, which is the state of Michoacán. And to give you an idea of the differing densities of migration in these communities, we can look at remittances, so the money sent back from the U.S. to Mexico, as kind of a measure of how many migrants are going to the U.S. And in Tehuacan, Puebla, about 2% of households receive remittances, whereas nearly 17% of households in Jilquilpan are receiving remittances from the U.S. So now I'd like to share with you some characteristics of our study population. As I said, about half of our participants were migrants and the other half were non-migrants. Our migrant participants were slightly older. The average age was about 19 years and 6 months, whereas our non-migrants average was about 19 years old, so about a six-month difference. Migrants tended to be partnered and have children, and they also had a history of dropping out of school and many were not in school at the time of the interview, whereas our non-migrant participants were all studying and were all still in school. Migrant participants were also more likely to talk about participating and have a history of drug and alcohol use, gang activity, as well as sexual activity. Our migrant participants exhibited a more risk-tolerant profile, and I'll show some evidence of this later on in some of the quotes that I'll read to you. But this was also consistent with their non-migrant siblings' perceptions of them. So you'll see later from the quotes that not only did the interviews from migrants kind of express this more risk-friendly profile, but the non-migrants shared observations about their siblings or husbands and family members to also be more risk-friendly. So a number of reasons emerged from the interviews as to why youth made the decision to migrate and why others made the decision to stay in Mexico. The most prominent reason for migrating to the U.S. among the youth in our study was for employment, for labor opportunities. For those who stayed behind, the biggest reason was to continue their education. And this value placed on education was one of the biggest differences between the two groups, between migrants and non-migrants. What we saw was that migrants often chose the prospects of a higher income in the United States to achieve their dreams more quickly. Meanwhile, non-migrants made short-term sacrifices, such as putting off making money for a car or for clothing, and put their time and energy into longer-term investments, such as, you know, traveling long distance to school and purchasing books for school. We also heard migrant youth migrate because they were curious about the United States. They wanted to go to Disneyland. They oftentimes didn't think much about going until an uncle or another relative showed up at their house and invited them to go along with them. Many of them, especially in the town of Jilquilpan, had family members in the United States that they hadn't seen for a very long time, so they were very likely to go for a vacation to visit relatives. And then, though this was not as common, there were some who migrated to escape bad family situations at home. And then some of the reasons, other reasons that youth listed for staying in Mexico was because they just simply were not interested in going into the U.S. and they believed they could be successful in their own country and stay closer to their family. A lot of them also talked about the fear of crossing the border and the dangers and fear of being deported. A common saying among non-migrants was that they would rather risk staying in their country, even if it meant eating beans, only beans every day, than risking their life to go to the other side. Many also stayed behind to care for parents that were elderly. Thank you. Or they wanted to wait. When we asked them, you know, you haven't migrated yet, would you ever migrate in the future? Many expressed that they wanted to wait till they were older or until they could go with proper authorization, such as a work visa. Okay, so now I'd like to share some passages with you from our interviews. And this first one is a quote from a 22-year-old male migrant who migrated at the age of 18 from Tehuacan, and this was from an interview when we interviewed him in Tehuacan. "I went because I was a little bit crazy around here. Not literally crazy, but crazy like running around and drinking alcohol crazy. I did not need money. I went out of curiosity. I am very risky. I was not afraid, but, well, when the Border Patrol caught me, I felt a little bit shaky." This next passage is from an 18-year-old non-migrant male in Jilquilpan, Michoacan, and is an example of how non-migrants describe their migrant siblings. "My brother comes and goes, and many people ask him if he has papers, and he doesn't. He says he likes to take risks." This next quote is from a 21-year-old female, also from Jilquilpan, Michoacan, and portrays why she decided not to migrate despite all of her siblings currently residing in the United States. "I did not leave because I was interested in continuing high school. I like my job and I like being in my country, and I'm not doing too poorly with my salary. And so for me, it's not this grand thing to go to the US. I have a goal, short and long term. Short term, I want to start studying in 4 months, and long term, finish my degree and work. And so that's my goal, being in my country." And finally, this last quote is from a 21-year-old non-migrant male in Tehuacan and is an example of how non-migrants compared themselves to their migrant siblings. "I do not know what my brother's intentions were in going. He said he wanted money, a car. More than anything, he wanted a car. Like he saw some of his friends with cars and he wanted money. I also want a car, but it's cool. Everything comes in time." So while the decision to migrate is, with some exceptions, made by individuals, we recognize that it is made in a specific context. So we explored several contextual factors in our study in relation to the decision to migrate. And one of those was gender. In our study, we found that females more often voiced fear about crossing the border as a reason to stay, as well as caretaking responsibilities for their own children or for their parents in Mexico. Despite these, you know, gendered discourses, we also interviewed a number of women who went and migrated to the U.S. without any male relatives. And this is kind of counter to what's been documented previously in the literature that shows that women more often migrate as daughters or wives. We also compared migration decisions by age and found that the youngest, the youngest participants in our study, so ages 15 to 18, really didn't migrate on their own. They were much more likely to have gone as younger children with their parents. And then we found that the older migrants, the older participants in our study, were much more likely to make the decision on their own and sometimes not even bring their parents into this decision. And it was often motivated to help support their family and especially their younger siblings' education. We also looked at the influence of community. And we found that youth decisions to migrate really reflected the social and migration dynamics of their communities of origin, such that in Jilquilpan, all the migrants that we interviewed were second and third generation, and so they really benefited from remittances sent home by the older relatives. The youth in Jilquilpan had more possibilities of migrating legally and more social networks in the United States due to a longer history of migration in Michoacan. And this increased accessibility of migration in Michoacan enabled some youth to migrate to the U.S. for much more capricious reasons than we saw in Tehuacan. For example, one youth went as a 15-year-old birthday gift from her aunt and uncle to go visit her cousins, and another went for a cousin's wedding. So migration was more of like a trip or a vacation for many in Michoacan. And then we also saw in Michoacan that those youth who did not migrate were very intentional. Because basically everyone had an opportunity to migrate, those who stayed behind were really intentional about this choice. On the other hand, in the low-density migration community of Tehuacan, all the youth that we interviewed were mostly first-generation migrants in their families. This meant that they did not benefit from remittances sent home from earlier generations, and they faced the pressure to migrate themselves to support oftentimes single moms or younger siblings. The fewer resources were available in Tehuacan, thereby increasing the uncertainty and perceived risk of migration. Fear of death was very present in the discourses from youth in Tehuacan, but absent from interviews in Michoacan. And oftentimes in Tehuacan, migration was the only option for them to move forward or to move ahead. So this was an exploratory qualitative study, and the main purpose was to generate hypotheses and explore more about adolescent migrants. So there were a number of limitations. Because we interviewed a convenient sample of temporary migrants, we cannot determine how representative they may be of other temporary migrants. And the fact that they were return migrants makes it difficult to generalize on, you know, if we could generalize these results to migrants who stay in the United States. We also, our migrant participants were slightly older on average than our non-migrant participants, and we know that participation in risk behavior increases with age, and so this may have biased some of our risk findings. Additionally, we retrospectively assessed the decision to migrate among migrants after they had returned from the U.S. And there's a lot of evidence out there that shows that just being exposed to the U.S. and the migration experience itself is likely to lead to more risk behaviors. And there was some evidence of this in our interviews. Despite these limitations, we feel that one of the biggest strengths of our study was our comparison group, that we compared migrants to non-migrants in their communities of origin in Mexico, and in some cases, their own families of origin. And we believe this enabled us to learn more about adolescent migrants than we may not have seen had we compared them to the traditional comparison group, which is usually a native U.S. population. To summarize our findings, though many youth, migrant and non, shared a motivation to go to the U.S. to pursue labor opportunities, there seemed to be a selection process in which those who ultimately make the decision to migrate are different than those who choose to stay. Our findings suggest that the decision to migrate among Mexican youth may select individuals with a higher propensity for risk. These apparent differences between migrant and non-migrant youth highlight the need for further investigation of this question and suggest the importance of tailored prevention strategies. Our study also documents that migration decisions are affected by age and gender, which has been documented previously in literature among adult migrants. And finally, the decision to migrate seems to be influenced by the opportunities in one's community. Thus, this threshold for risk-taking may be influenced by what alternatives are available, rather than merely individual preferences. And this idea that risk-taking may be related to local opportunities has important implications for Mexican immigrant youth who often settle in areas of the U.S. where opportunities are limited. And so we feel this finding points to the importance of youth development models and the youth asset models that were talked about earlier, as well as policies such as the DREAM Act that really aim to give access to higher education to Latino immigrant youth. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe we have one here and then we'll take yours. Jen?
I was surprised that, I think you said a group only in your sample of non-migrants who are still in school. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if that's in part because of where you recruited or So that was one thing. And then two, if you could comment on whether the socioeconomic factors were similar for the two cities, access to education.
Mm-hmm. So. If you could repeat the question. Okay. Did everyone hear the question?
No. So if you could. One of the comments was that it was surprising that all the non-migrants were still in school, and was that perhaps due to our recruitment or where we collected data? It could have been, we did sort of a venue-based recruitment model, so we went to these two communities and asked key informants where we would be likely to find migrant households or migrant youth, and then we picked venues to recruit. So a lot of times we were just in the main plaza, but oftentimes we ended up going to schools. But every time we tried to recruit a migrant, we tried to recruit a non-migrant from that same household. So I think it was just that most of the youth who had migrated and come back, they had stopped schooling and didn't get back involved, And so I'm not sure. I don't think it was because of our recruitment methods, but it's a good question. And then the second question was the socioeconomic.
Right, specifically access to education, since you're comparing to cities, mm-hmm. it's possible that in the city with the most migrants there is readily access to
opportunity.
I would think that in Michoacan there was more access. Just a lot of the places where we recruited in Tehuacan were very rural and far away from the main town in Tehuacan, so they had to travel long distances to get to school. And so we tried to kind of pair these cities looking at CONAPO's data on socioeconomic indexes and migration indexes, but we couldn't control for all of those factors, so that's a good point.
Okay. Yes.
Since you've established contact with some of these families with the returning migrants, is it possible that you can find family members who are still here in the United States and use your same tool to interview those to see how those who have stayed might differ from the ones that you interviewed?
Yeah, that's a very good point. And we also asked youth why they returned to Mexico to kind of get at, were they unsuccessful? Because there's a lot of different theories, maybe when people get sick in the U.S., they come back to Mexico to retire or to get, health care or to be taken care of by their family. So we wanted to kind of look at why kids were coming back, and we didn't want to interview a bunch of unsuccessful immigrants, people who didn't find jobs and work. So I think there's two ways of dealing with that. But yeah, if we had more time and wanted to continue this study, we could contact them.
Thank you. I saw a hand in the back there. Did that person? Yes, please.
In describing the population, you said that the migrant adolescents tend to be a little bit older in age and also have one child and be partners. Mm-hmm. Did you explore any further as to if the children were the families of these migrants were, if they remained in the United States or returned with them, and also what the circumstances were around state around reproduction?
Yeah, we had a number of questions about partners and relationships and kind of age at which they first became sexually active. And then most had returned and then started their family. Or a few started their families in the U.S., but they came back to Mexico, and then they were going back to the U.S., so it was kind of divided. But I would say, I'm just trying to like scan the group of 47. I would say the majority, and I can, you know, email you more specific data or answer more specific questions, but I would say the majority had their families in Mexico.
You draw that in front?
I just wanted to piggyback off of the education. Was it allowed the non-migrants, was it that they were in school because they were receiving help from the migrants?
Yeah, that's one of our theories, that the non-migrants, you know, often were the younger siblings who their older brother had gone and was sending money back, and so there maybe wasn't as much need for them to go.
Okay. Well, are there any questions of any of our panelists who's presented?
I have a question for Dr. Brady, and I was wondering why smoking in front of friends was not considered a promotion or was not listed as one of the promoting influences, since smoking in front of friends was one of the things that peers said, oh, my friends can smoke in front of you.
Thanks for bringing that up. Just to repeat the question, this person was wondering why smoking in front of friends wasn't considered as an attempt to promote smoking. And I should note that we only had so many behaviors that we assessed. So there could be a multitude of behaviors, including smoking right in front of friends, that would play a role in promoting smoking.